VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour, and I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And I want to welcome everybody to our very, very last radio show of year four. And then exactly 1 week from today, I'd like to welcome everybody back to our very first radio show of year five.
That's right. It is our
208th
show.
It should be 206 because we missed two for hurricanes.
Well, no, I still count those as weeks. So,
Oh, yeah. Okay. That counts. Yeah,
but you're correct.
We've actually physically been here live as we are today every single week except the two times that we were herded out of town because of impending hurricanes. So I'm very proud of that record, and we don't intend to break it.
No, we do not.
So how do you wind up year four? Well, you wind it up on a note that's kind of not great, not horrible. It's just another decent week in the market where a couple of the major indices gained a little bit and one didn't quite cut it. But there was certainly no harm done, and some of us who are a little bit more unusual in our investing style have actually things to smile about this week. So we'll talk about a few of those. But in general, we have had an incredible month. Following an incredibly bad month, we've had an incredibly good month.
Mm-hmm.
And it proves a number of things, and they all have to do with predictability. There isn't much.
No, definitely
That's
not.
That's the bottom line. If we can impart on everybody out there or anybody out there that you can think all you want, you can read all you want, and I'll prove it during the show today in some cases, that you can't know. And I will, I've always told you, and I always will, I will tell you exactly where the top and the bottom were a few weeks after they actually hit it.
Yeah, but you can take it a step further than that. If everybody on the news is saying one thing, I don't know what is going on, but I can assure you that that one thing they're talking about is definitely not happening.
That's exactly right. We've got a lot of those examples coming up today. But anyway, welcome to everybody. If you're a regular, thanks for coming back. We, of course, have been doing the show for you all along, and we know it's growing by leaps and bounds because we get told all the time, and that's a good thing. And if you're new and you're driving by or just sitting around and your radio was on to the channel, stick around for a while. Something will happen, I guarantee you, during the course of an hour where you pick up some useful information or someone will ask a question. And if you want to be that someone, all you got to do is pick up the telephone, dial 904-222-TALK, 222-8255, and callers will immediately be put at the head of the line, and we'll talk about what you want to talk about. We will have a trivia question right after the first break, and it's a doozy today, I think.
I agree.
Adam didn't get it. So
no.
I'm always proud of it when Adam doesn't get it right. So we'll do that. But meanwhile, this was a week, you know how some weeks feel pretty good and they wind up lousy, and some feel lousy and they wind up good. This one felt fine to me and wound up being nothing.
Yeah, it felt like nothing to me. And I mean, you didn't see a lot of huge moves on any of the indexes.
Well, it was shortened by the holiday.
Yeah.
And it started out poorly on Tuesday, but that all came back.
Yeah, it just was, I mean, it really, the three major indexes all ended up within 0.2% of where they started the week. So that is not a lot of movement. We did see one somewhat down day on Tuesday and then somewhat big day on Friday. So they kind of canceled each other out, and it was just, there wasn't a ton of news, but there wasn't a lot of good news either. So in some weeks in recent months, that would have been traded down, and that didn't happen. So that was a good sign.
I always love it when the week closes out on a buying note where the market's up nicely on Friday, because then nobody's afraid of what's going on this weekend.
And the other note was that Tuesday, when the market was down triple digits on the Dow, there wasn't a lot of volume either. Mm-hmm. So that was certainly not a crazy frenzy sell-off. It was just a mild, moderate decline.
You know how long an American three-day weekend is? It's 5 days.
Right.
Well, Friday through
you
Tuesday.
Can't leave town on Friday afternoon when everyone else is leaving. You have to leave on Thursday.
You don't want to come back on Monday either.
Exactly. So
it was a good week, all in all.
Yeah.
I'm very happy.
For the year, the Dow and the S&P are up more than 6%, while the NASDAQ is up 8%. So
4 weeks ago?
Yeah.
Not so much.
From the Christmas Eve lows, the markets are all up around 12%, too. Not bad.
Not bad at all.
Not complete rebound. No new all-time highs coming in the real near future, most likely. But still, not a bad rebound. So on a sector basis, we saw some shuffling in the leaderboard this week. Technology actually gained the most, while energy, which had kind of been leading the way up in recent weeks, had the largest decline. Energy, financial, and industrials are still the biggest gainers on the year, all up around 9%. So that those three categories have not been the big recipients of the recent rallies. So that it's interesting to see things shift this year.
Oh, but there have been so many sector shifts, and even some of them recently. But if you were making a lot last year, they're not doing so well this year.
Right.
And some of those have changed in the past week. Others have not. It's so random that's what I was talking about a few minutes ago, that how the heck would you possibly play this except to diversify?
Yeah, definitely. It's impossible to predict. For the first time in quite a while, international markets actually outperformed their U.S. counterparts during the week.
China.
I know. Brazil, which is up almost 15% this year alone, saw another week of strong gains at 1.4%. Canada and Russia also gained more than 1%, and they've both rallied about 10% or more this year. And even some European countries joined the rally, with France, France, Germany, and Spain kind of joining in. Emerging markets also outperformed their more established counterparts, gaining 1.5% on the week, and are now up more than 8% this year. So that kind of begs the question, if the world economy is collapsing like everyone's saying, why are we seeing emerging markets outperforming?
Well, they're also saying that Trump has hijacked the economy, and all I can say is I hope he never gives it back.
Commodities were a little bit mixed this week. The index basically remained flat. Oil didn't move much. Natural gas slid 3.6%, but gold gained 1.5% and silver 2.5%. So the net effect was that the commodities index was almost dead even.
Mm-hmm. Which is a pretty good reason to buy the index share again.
Yeah, true.
Not that I'm always listening to my own advice, but still.
Predicting the movement of natural gas in the last year would have been impossible.
From way over 4 to dipping under 3 and then halfway in between.
And there hasn't been a lot of small moves. They've all been big moves.
Big move, yeah. And what direction, you don't even know when you wake up in the morning.
And you would think, we just had this big cold spell, you'd think natural gas would rally. No.
Nope.
Opposite. Fixed income fared pretty well this week, with long treasuries up 0.8%, and the overall market gaining more than 0.3%. There hasn't been a lot of movement in the price of bonds recently, as opposed to the fourth quarter last year, when we saw rising prices when equities were falling. So bonds have been really stable.
Yeah, and the interest rates have just kind of mellowed out a little bit.
Which
is good in that it's not creating any havoc in the bond market.
The home mortgage
market is coming back. Yeah, the applications for mortgages were really high.
It fell this week, but last week it spiked. So it only fell a little bit. It didn't give back that entire spike.
Yeah, I've got a major number here, too. During the government shutdown, the Dow went up 2,945 points, or 13.5%, during the government shutdown. Now, what's all the news and all the hair-pulling going on TV? It's all about the government shutdown? Yeah, right. Give me a break. All right, we'll see you right after the break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Banwe Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banwe Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banwe.
And I'm Adam Banwe.
And this week's trivia question, sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. Give Ken a call at 904-636-7888. My question today is about really good days in the market. In the past 15 years, the top 10 percentage gains in the market were spread out over any time in that 15 years, but how many of them happened during the Great Recession, which is defined by October of 07 through March of 09. Out of the top 10 gaining days, how many were during the Great Recession? It's a whole number between 0 and 10. You could say 0. I'll take that one off the table. It's more than 0. How's that? They've cut it down already. I just give you a 10% chance of improving on it. A couple more things we wanted to mention in the market wrap. And Adam, one was a prediction Adam made not terribly long ago that finally came true.
Yeah, that's right. One of our favorite economic indicators is the initial jobless claims number, which, as if you listen to the show, you know has been hanging down in the low 200,000s for a long, long time. And this week it actually broke the 200,000 barrier and came in at 199,000 for the first time since 1969.
November of 69, when the population of the country was about two-thirds of what it is today.
Yep, and so that number is not indexed for population growth, so that is truly remarkable to have a number that low.
And yet the R word is everywhere.
And so we should mention that that indicator is also one of the best recession indicators. When you see that start to creep up and eventually go over 300,000, be a little worried, but there are no signs of that right now. You might see it move up a little bit in the coming weeks because of the government shutdown, but then it should come back down.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that's about to happen, well, this coming week especially, we get our first look at fourth quarter GDP. It'll be the one that will be revised, but it's usually within a pretty low range. So if that comes out higher than about 2.8, then a lot of people are going to be eating a lot of crow, except that nobody ever makes these people eat crow, so they probably won't.
True.
But I think the more likely number is well into the threes. What do I know? I just watch these things. I do know that when employers hire 312,000 people in December, they're not looking at a recession in February.
No, not usually.
No.
That temporary labor usually gets hired earlier than December, too, so yeah. I don't think it was that. We should talk a little bit about earnings season as well. Mm-hmm. It really picked up this week with over 100 companies reporting, and next week we'll see 300-plus. This should give us a better idea of how the season will look and also how the market will react to it, but so far, okay. The earnings beat rate fell a little bit this week, coming in at a respectable 65%. That sort of mirrors last season and the season before that. The revenue rate actually rose from 49%, and it came up to 55% this week. So it's a nice improvement, but it's not at the 60-plus percent rate that I want to see step in the right direction.
And you see the guidance numbers are turning negative now.
So far, but that's so early, too. I mean, none of these numbers are going to stay where they are.
That's a human nature thing, too. When people fail to meet their last guidance, the CEOs are unhappy about that. Because they don't want to put out numbers that they can't make. So what are they going to do going forward? They're going to cut their estimates and then hope to beat them. Mm-hmm. So it's a natural reaction by people who have a lot to lose by being wrong. And believe me, under some of the egregious laws of this country, you don't want to be wrong on that very often. And you don't want to be very wrong when you are wrong. So it's crazy. You know, I'm with Trump. He wants to get rid of quarterly reporting. In his opinion, shared by many, including me, a three-month time horizon for a business is just so stupid.
It really is.
You look at the Chinese attitude. They don't care what's happening this quarter. They care where you're going to be in 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 50 years, and you know. So they arbitrarily put out a number, which is not a bad system. You think about, well, let's see, what would make everybody happy? That's what we did. How's that?
One other thing I wanted to touch on: the housing market saw some positive data points last week. Had two misses this week. Mortgage applications, as we mentioned, fell off a very a huge number actually the week before, and the inventory of unsold homes has increased in recent weeks. However, it's at 4.34 months of supply, which is close to the level that we saw right before the housing crisis in 2007, 2008. And it's come up to that. So it's actually as low as it was at the sort of the peak frenzied buying in 2006-ish.
Which means we got to get these builders moving.
Yeah.
And that, I think you'll see, it's going to stabilize mortgage rates at least because demand is going to perk up a little bit. But you see what happens. It's a self-correcting system. Rates come down, people buy. rates go up, people stop buying, and that's what free markets do.
Yep.
They're equal and opposite forces at work. It's the same thing as gasoline prices. I've always said, which is actually based 70-odd percent on oil prices, I've always said it's a great market. The cure for high oil prices is high oil prices because people use less, and then down it comes. The key for low oil prices is low oil prices because then they buy SUVs and drive everywhere. Demand goes up, boom, it comes right back. That's why it's so volatile. And it's nothing more or less than human nature, and the mortgage market is not any different than any other commodity. Interest, like so many things, is basically just a commodity.
Mm-hmm. And the Jacksonville market in particular doesn't mm-hmm. seem to have gotten overheated at any point. Now, there are some pockets around the U.S. where that has happened, and you're seeing prices retreat a little bit. You're not seeing that. At least we haven't seen it here in Jacksonville at all.
No, and remember, a couple months ago, I think we were rated the number one place to move in the country.
I wish they would stop rating us. Yeah. People well, might actually move here.
I don't care if you move here. Stay west of the waterway. East of the ditch is off limits to anybody else. The traffic's too abysmal out there already, just so you all know.
That's all right. They're all moving to Nocatee anyway.
All right, Howard and Angela, if you carried over from their show right before us, they were mentioning that to get a mortgage this year, they want you to file your tax returns. And he's absolutely right, and I have some experience with that already this year. But I want to tell people, you do so risking some extra time expense because you don't have all your information yet.
Mm-hmm.
I got a release schedule. Our clients, we custody all of our clients' funds at TD Ameritrade, one of the 4, 5, 6 big custody houses in the country, and they all deal pretty much the same. And they release their 1099 schedule, and the 1099 is for anybody who has income other than wages, salaries, tips, sort of thing, which includes, of course, all your investment income, interest, and all that. So what they call the early delivery of 1099s, they are being posted as of January 18th. And I noticed I got 2 in yesterday's mail, and I got a notice that they were online 2 or 3 days ago. These are the early rounds, and they're for the things that are pretty straightforward. Now, then once they have been put out, they will notify you. You'll get an email, and you'll get a hard copy, too. Clients should allow 5 to 7 business days for mail delivery after they've been posted. So we're right there. Yesterday means that it was a week from the first day that they were out. So this appears to be holding pretty true. But if you have securities such as mutual funds, unit investment trusts, exchange-traded funds, real estate investment trusts, or REITs, you may want to hold off just a little bit, because they have to do a little extra bookkeeping work, allocating their long-term capital gains and short-term capital gains in January, and it can take a little bit longer. So they're probably not going to come out right away. The second wave is scheduled for February 7th, and those are the ones that don't have a great deal of complexity. Then the next wave, for the ones that are income reallocation, they call them, like commodity trust, royalty trust, things like that, those are not going to be released until February 13th. Now, after that, starting on February 22nd, now we begin the correction cycle. And I've always made it a point to tell our clients, unless you absolutely have to file, don't file until perhaps into March, because chances are, somewhere along the line, you might well get a corrected 1099. And if it's not insignificant, then you're going to have to file a 1040X, which is a revised form. I don't know anybody who really wants to do that. A far smarter attitude about your taxes is to maybe owe them $100 instead of getting $3,000 back. Then you're not in a hurry at all until April 15th to make that payment. So if you are in a situation where you get a lot of money back, you should be asking yourself if you really want to do that. Just a little word to the wise from someone who has seen it way too often. Also, should you have rolled over a retirement plan in the past year, a direct trustee transfer or a rollover that is actually qualified, you will get a form 5498, which says you not only took the money out, for that you'll get a 1099, which is taxable to you, you have to have an offsetting 5498 saying, but you reinvested it in time so you don't have to pay taxes this year. When do you suppose those come out? Not real early. I do believe, unless the law's been changed, they're not even required to come out until after tax filing day. I have never understood that. Only a government could think of it. I have gotten all of mine the last couple of years prior to actual tax filing day. But remember that if you do have that rollover, you are not required to file that 5498 with your return. But you better get one. You better have it in your file because they might just ask you. And another thing about us, we do not prepare tax returns. We are not CPAs. We have to defer all those things to the professionals. But we're good tax planners, and that is part of tax planning. So if you want to talk to us about such things, we'll help you plan. But we won't do your taxes. Just that simple. All right, we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. Got to take a short break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And our trivia question is still out there. In the past 15 years, of the 10 best overall market days in that 15 years, how many of them happened during the Great Recession? Good morning, Marshall.
Gentlemen.
How are you?
I will beg off on the poll since I was fortunate enough to win some chocolate. The other day.
So, not going to press your luck, or you just can't stand prosperity?
Yeah. I find it interesting scanning through for my sports news. I stumble across all the Chicken Little writers out there. They can take any subject and make it look like the end of the world.
It's talent.
And yet even they are reaching very hard these days. And I noticed those that I think of as pretty good columnists that I enjoy reading, they're not mentioning anything about the elephant that was in the room, a month ago? China.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, has that just gone deathly quiet because it doesn't make the president look bad?
That's what's happening. They're inching closer and closer to a deal. And as Adam and I have been saying for weeks and weeks now, look out when that one gets signed.
Mm-hmm.
It
doesn't fit their narrative.
So interesting. Yeah. Well, I'm glad we have an adult in the room somewhere.
But it's not always easy being the grown-up. You know that.
I understand. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
Have a good one, Marshall.
See ya.
He's absolutely right, though. The one little five-letter word. If that thing blows up, which I sincerely doubt because it will hurt China worse than us, then, yeah, we're going to have bad times. But if that thing gets settled, I don't care how quiet it is, it'll get out.
Yep.
And we'll be singing out from the tops of the trees.
No doubt. I think a lot of it's going to be baked in by that point because this recent rally off our lows has been driven by that potential news.
We noticed the rhetoric is not out there anymore. They were taking pot shots at Trump and that sort of thing for a while. Now that's kind of settled down. And it's kind of a similar thing with North Korea, too. There's some posturing. They're doing a lot of face saving. We've talked about that on and off over the months, too. But fundamentally, we're talking instead of firing missiles. So that's a really good thing when you think about the alternatives that are rather unacceptable. In fact, we'll talk a little bit about Venezuela today, too, if we get a minute. But meanwhile, Adam had some more interesting news of the week involving my favorite little congressional darling that I call OCD. Everybody else has a different name for it.
Yeah, it's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, I think.
Which everybody in the media has practiced till it just comes off their tongue in a little
bit. AOC, my favorite millennial politician, has declared that climate change is our World War II. And warns the rest of us that the world is going to end in 12 years. So,
I guess I shouldn't be investing for the super long term.
Right. I think we should all change our time horizons and, I don't know, a party?
Hey, all you annuity salespeople out there, you better start calling her and telling her that your business is going to suffer.
I mean, okay, there's so much wrong with this statement. First of all, our World War II already happened, so this we is won. Our yeah, and we were in it. I don't know if anyone, there's probably a few people out there that might remember it, but I mean, what is she even talking about? And then also predicting that the world will end in 12 years when the last 12 years nothing's really changed, and it's, what is it, going to accelerate suddenly? Or where is she coming up with this?
Al Gore said there would be no North Pole by 2012, I think.
It's unbelievable.
By my watch, it's past that.
It's truly unbelievable. It's just, you know, she also has that other quote about, I don't understand why everyone has to be so factually correct. I mm-hmm. would rather be morally right.
Yeah. Let's talk about tax rates. She thinks that we're not paying enough. At mm-hmm. least the successful among us are not. And that 70% might be a good starting point. Because after a while, you've made enough money.
Exactly. And who determines what that is, what that point is?
That would not be me. Mm-mm. A government big enough to tax you at 70% after $10 million is also big enough to tax you at 70% after 9876543 21 or a half or whatever. And if you don't recognize that, you know, that camel's nose grows big time when it gets its nose in the tent. Now, let's talk a little bit about the Me Too nature of that with Pocahontas.
Yes. So, speaking of ridiculous tax plans, this week Elizabeth Warren decided to come up with her own to try and top AOC and proposed a wealth tax. Now, a lot of people, and I have another article here I want to discuss, but a lot of people are confusing wealth and income.
They always
are two
do.
Very different things.
Do not think that that is unintentional.
No, of course. They're trying to merge the two words so that anyone who makes a decent living is rich. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's definitely a planned course of
attack. They got
rich
at $100,000, some of them, and that's annual income, but it could also be net worth. A lot of people with a net worth of $1 million don't make $100,000.
Right. No, a lot of people who, in fact, we know quite a few who have never made over $50,000 and have a net worth of over $1 million. Yep. That's very possible to do in this country.
Takes time and diligence and all that, but
exactly.
You can get there.
No doubt. And so Elizabeth Warren's proposal would tax your net worth. So if you are worth $50 million or more, then you would pay an annual tax on that wealth up to 3% if you're over $1 billion. So at $1 billion, you'd pay 3%. It would cost Jeff Bezos, pre-divorce, $4.1 billion this year.
Imagine
that he would have to write a check to the government for.
Imagine the savings he's getting for getting divorced. $2 billion.
It might be more if his net worth dropped enough.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on what Amazon stock did. But, I mean, it's just really unbelievable. That is, what is the justification for a wealth tax? You have money. I want it. Uh-huh. Give it to me. It's theft. It's absolute theft.
Little do those wacko leftists understand that their ultra rich donors are scared to death of a wealth tax.
Oh, they'll never go for it.
You'll lose them, people. So bring it on.
Keep proposing it. It'll never happen. But
well, we did a little mathematics during the last break. So let's say they do this. How much does it generate a year?
So the estimate would be that the 174 Americans on the Bloomberg Billionaires Index would pay a total of $61 billion.
And Congress would spend that in?
Just over 5 days.
Yep. So maybe we could get 10, we could get 11 days out of it if we doubled it. Or if we took it all, well, let's see, that'd be about 30 times that. So we'd last late into the summer.
Yep.
You see the ludicrous nature? As AOC, OCD, whatever, always says, much more important to have good intentions.
So most of these people that would be taxed on this would be successful businessmen that did not inherit this money. They made it by taking chances, putting themselves on the line, working hard, and creating something that got really popular. So what is so wrong with that? Isn't that the American dream? Why do we need to take it from them?
Because it's not fair. fair. You know Milton Friedman, most of you with any kind of education. Milton Friedman's been dead a long time. He's doing his major form of writing a long time ago. He said something a long time ago that we should pay attention to. He said, one of the great mistakes is to judge policies and programs by their intentions rather than the results.
Excellent.
That is a forward-thinking man.
Here is an article off of MarketWatch, a very popular website for finance, that says most Americans who earn $90,000 a year say they don't consider themselves rich. That's the,
no,
that's the headline. My question is, if you were rich, why are you working at a job that pays you only $90,000 a year? I mean,
if you were rich, you would either not work or you'd be making a heck of a lot more money than that. It's unbelievable, isn't it? Paul, we are playing the music, which means we've only got about 30 seconds left. So if you don't mind, hang on through the break and we'll take you right after we come back. I wanted to mention another couple of really interesting headlines of the week. Stock market bears are preparing for February 13th. So prepare, everybody.
I'll get ready.
Yeah. Stansberry. Remember the top guy on the list of people that you don't read? You don't follow, you don't ever click through. That's the top one. All right, and here's a great one from Tuesday morning. Trump to end the dollar as we know it by January 29th. You only got 3 days. Spend everything you've got, I guess.
I'll get on it.
And these people are selling what? Oh, gold. Yep. See you right after the break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And the trivia question is still out there. Out of the top 10 best days in 15 years, how many happened during the Great Recession? This segment is sponsored by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance because things are growing out there despite the cool weather. Call Troy at 662-9794. And we're going to take Paul after one more headline from Adam because I barely stopped laughing in time to come back on.
This is my favorite of the week. So the world's going to end in 12 years because of climate change, and the billionaires apparently really care because they are over in Davos right now getting at their annual meeting, and there are more than 1,500 private jets that flew them in individually.
Yep.
So they, yeah.
I am rarely speechless.
And guess what they're talking about over there?
Climate change.
Climate change.
Yeah. Good morning, Paul.
Regarding Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez,
OCD.
The last intelligent thing she ever said was, sir, would you like butter on your toast? Now, regarding the, you were talking about people getting large income tax refunds. Historically, you could always decrease or reduce the amount of weekly withholding on your paycheck by increasing the number of personal exemptions.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
However, as you know, as of 2017, because of the incompetent Republican House Ways and Means Committee, they abolished the personal exemption.
That they did.
So I'm wondering now, how can you either adjust or increase or decrease the amount of withholding now that the personal exemption is gone?
I will answer that question by next week, I promise you.
That's an interesting question.
I have a delightful CPA who has a delightful habit of not charging me to ask her questions like that. So I will find out from a professional, and if you're listening next week, you will get that answer.
Can't you just
Gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Can't you just put any number on there anyway, on the form when you're filling it out, when you take a job? Do they ever check that?
I don't know. I don't know if there's a new system for that or not.
I don't know.
We'll know soon. Captain Dave.
Hey, guys. Thought I'd give you a report from the Caribbean about Venezuela.
Oh, good. One of my favorite topics.
Yeah, well, the deal is there's an organization called CARICOM, which is the Caribbean Community of Nations.
Okay.
And that's a member, that's a small group. It's the Caribbean that's mm-hmm. a member of the OAS, which is the Organization of American States. And Venezuela, for years, there was a thing called Petrocaribe, where they were pumping oil at reduced rates on the come, so to speak. About 2 weeks ago, Jamaica nationalized the 49% share of Petrojam, which is Jamaica Petroleum, that Venezuela owned. But basically, the organizations, whether it's CARICOM or OAS, are tying themselves in knots trying to figure out exactly what to say about this guy, because half of them are socialists to start with.
Yeah, it's a problem.
And it's, you know, we have an agreement in CARICOM that we will not interfere with the internal operations of any, you know, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, how can we overturn what the people of Venezuela voted for? Percent. What are you, crazy? The guy's a thug.
Saddam Hussein always got at least 96% of the vote.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so they really are tying themselves in knots down there.
That's amazing,
isn't
it? Trying
to figure out what to say about this. All the governments are. Brazil said no. You know, we're not recognizing.
Well, no.
Mexico's going, well, maybe. We don't really know what exactly. Mexico's really trying to walk the fence.
Mexico had an election and Brazil had an election. They switched.
Yeah.
Brazil now is in the hands of the guy they call Trump Jr., and
right.
Mexico's in the hands of what I would call Pelosi Light. And you're going to see it in policies. You're seeing it now. They just opened the borders with Guatemala and let the people through. Now, he is offering them amnesty, but he's also saying, I'll get you some buses and we'll take you up to the border.
So yeah, we'll just let you go.
It's policy exactly like you would expect to hear it from the people you're hearing it from.
Yep. And that's, and like, as I say, the thing is that when Trump recognized, and today I just heard that Germany and France both recognized the opposition guy.
Yep.
Until such time as.
Or if there's an election.
Maduro runs another phony election.
Right.
But I just want to give you, you know, they really don't know what to say.
You want to hear another one? You're not going to hear as much about this because of all the stuff going on in Great Britain right now. But Maduro has asked the Bank of England to return $1.2 billion of the Venezuelan gold stash that they have. Gold is only stored in a couple places around the world,
right,
for the big ones, and Bank of England has a lot of it. Bank of England said no. They are not going to give Venezuela its own gold. And what they're listening to is people like Trump and now the people that are joining them. This has been used ever since Hugo Chavez was in there. He's been trying to get some of it back. He's actually dwindled it down from about $11 billion to $8 billion. Now they want another $1.2 and they know it's going to disappear. Only, you think it's going to go to creditors, or do you think it's going to go to some magic account that has the name Maduro on it? So I think he would leave if he could get the money. Yeah, it works every time it's tried, right?
Yeah, so I don't know. As I say, everybody with a brain or everybody has eyes to see realizes that, you know, that they have raped the country.
Yep.
The people are starving. Why the military is behind them is somewhat of a question. I mean, what's going on with the military?
Take that one more step.
If he loses them, it's over. But they're on the payroll.
Of course,
but
they're well fed.
But the report basically is that the Caribbean nations are pretty split on what to say. So they're kind of Jamaica recognized the other guy, and of course the socialists in Jamaica. Oh, see, America talked us into it. They called the United States.
Of course,
America.
Yeah.
You know, we're lackeys for the Americans and all that.
They would take it one step further.
I'm heading down tomorrow, so I'll give you a call next week and see what the scuttlebutt on the street is about Venezuela.
Okay, but I want you to answer one thing quickly first.
Sure.
Who are the only armed people in Venezuela?
The army.
End of discussion.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They can't resist.
The truth.
Yep. So there you go.
All right.
All right, young man.
Good rest of your day, guys.
Thanks. Talk to you soon. Yeah. Now you know why. When you want to control the people, just look up Karl Marx, and he'll tell you exactly how to do it. Take away all the freedoms of the people. Pretty soon, you have absolutely controlled everybody, including the military, who are armed and fed, and including all the other people who are unarmed and unfed. And yet, the socialists... Oh, Bernie Sanders is about to announce, by the way, I can hardly stop smiling. So, and that...
It's a crowded field.
It is. It's very amusing. All right. What other fun things? Adam and I were just talking about what Vanguard did recently, and he brought up a point I hadn't thought of. We talked to lots of people during the many years about options and that sort of thing and the various forms of risk in the market. But there are some funds out there that are what they call leveraged. So some of them will leverage, for instance, the S&P 500 or whatever. And what that means is if it goes up one, that one goes up two. There are also some three times where if it goes up one, they go up three. They're very, very risky. They have them inverse and positive. And there are also things like dog. Is it dog? I think that's it's just a pure inverse of the diamonds. Mm-hmm. So it's 1 over DIA equals DOG. Now, that is a different form of risk than a multiplier level. As Adam said, you can, and this is his words in there. He says, you can take the same amount of risk by saying it's going to go down as it can going up. But what Vanguard did for all of its people, it dropped both the leveraged funds and the inverse funds. And I was telling him during the break how much I thought that was a great idea for Vanguard, which is not a company that's associated with high-risk investing. And he brought up the fact that half of that, the leveraged funds, sounded like a great idea, but he doesn't believe they should have done the inverse. And as I sit here and think and talk about it a little bit, I kind of have to go his way.
I don't see why you should be able to bet on the market going up, which is what stock picking is.
Right.
Why not be able to bet on the market going down?
It makes so much sense, I had to actually concede that he was probably right.
I don't.
But the point of all of this is options, leverage, all those things. The normal person out there is not in a position to take that kind of risk.
No, definitely not.
All right, of the top 10 days in the last 15 years, the first 9 best days happened during the Great Recession. The returns for one day in the 10th of which was in 2011, the top 9 best return days, 10.8, 9.9, 6.9, 6.6, 6.3, 5, 5, 5, 8, 4, 8, 4, 7. Those are one-day gains. You try to time this market, you're going to lose. We'll see you next week for year 5, show 1. This is the Bamley Financial Hour.